Good evening, I'm Paul Mears, and welcome to another edition of Penalty Spot. Of course, alongside me as usual, Curtis Hines. Well, coming up on this evening's edition of Penalty Spot, the development of local football takes the spotlight of the BFA's technical director, Ahmed Mohamed. Football in Trinidad moves closer to a FIFA ban. We get the latest from Fazir Mohamed in Port of Spain. Lionel Messi continues to dominate the international headlines. Our analysts will discuss the biggest transfer story of the year and Arsenal's win over Liverpool in the Community Shield. And of course, we take your calls. It's time to talk football on Penalty Spot in association with the Barbados Football Association. And welcome back to the program. We say good evening to all of our listeners. Really great to have you join us again as we talk about the beautiful game of football. Good evening to you, Curtis. Thank you. Curtis, you may need to unmute. Thank you. You're still muted. Okay, we're going to continue.
Yeah, problem solved. Rookie mistake. Okay. Good evening to you all. Good evening to everyone locked in, especially those of you listening via the online stream, VOB929.com. Apologies for that false start. Welcome to another edition of Penalty Spot in association with the BFA. As Paul would have said, lots to speak about tonight. We have a special guest. He's already locked in, the BFA Technical Director, Ahmed Mohamed. A special good evening to him. And of course, we have lots of developments. We have the full list of candidates now available for the upcoming BFA election, which is expected to be heatedly contested. Paul, I got quite a few flyers today, some PDF files and stuff.
Guys are looking pretty sharp. Yeah, I got a few myself.
And of course, on the international scene, one Lionel Messi dominating the proceedings. Pardon the pun, but it's a messy-looking situation as he tries to engineer a way out of Barcelona. The Liga is saying, okay, that can't happen without you paying the fee. Guess what's the fee? £600 million. That is not going to happen. But all of that over the next hour or so. Let's begin with our technical director, Ahmed Mohamed. Good evening to you, sir. Long time no see. And welcome to the program. Before we really get deep into the issues, what's the very latest with the Barbados national team?
Well, good evening, everybody. And thank you very much for having me after nearly 4 years for the first time in your radio station. So, yeah.
Second time, Ahmed. We've had you already. It's so long, it seems like 4 years.
Yes. So, yeah. So far, so good. I mean, we have started working right after when we get the green light from the government and we put our protocols in place for the COVID-19. Since then, we have been working really nearly every day. So right now, the senior national team is training 5 days a week. Sometimes, you know, we increase to 6 days. So right now, I'm happy what I'm seeing. And the development is so good that we even included some sports sciences. So to look where the actual form of the players are. And we are doing some little tests to know where is our advantage and to get rid of our disadvantage that we have on the field. So right now, we can be happy how the thing is going with the training with the senior national team.
When we look at the next major event, it has to be the upcoming World Cup qualifiers, Panama and company. Pretty daunting task. We had the head coach, Russell Latipi, on the program last week. He was quietly confident that Barbados will put in a good showing. You have been around this bunch a bit longer than Coach Latipi. You have seen the beginning of the transition to the current bunch. How would you rate the squad?
Well, right now, the squad is quite good. I mean, to be honest with you, seeing the last 3 years of our development, as you know, where we started and where we are today, we don't need to hide from nobody. Because if you see our national teams or national team program, all our national teams are in Division One. Started by the under 15, under 17, under 20, who just shortly qualified for a knockout stage of a major tournament, because I'm saying a major tournament because it's a CONCACAF championship. There we qualified for the round of 16. And that shows you the improving of our teams. And the previous team, the under 17, played 28 games in the last 3 years and lost only 2 games. Even we adapt and went higher playing teams like Argentina and losing 2-0. That shows you the hard work behind. Really and truly, a lot of the players that we had in the national programs are included and integrated into the actual senior national team. And being honest with you, we don't need to hide from nobody. I mean, football is played by the day. We know we are competing against professionals, so that's why we put in place programs to get, you know, to make shorter the gap between us and those countries like, you know, Panama, Costa Rica, USA, Canada, and Mexico. So we are working hard. We're doing the same thing as they're doing, even though that we do not have the resources and the money that they have. But what we have is the knowledge and the facility to could work and produce quality good players, quality homegrown good players. So I'm pretty confident, and football is played by the day.
Okay, we've also been joined by BFA President Randy Harris. Good evening to you, sir. Some questions coming in already. Ahmed, what's the status of Christian Pierce in relation to playing for Barbados? We had that question last week. Just at the end, we couldn't get an answer from Coach Ladipi. We were out of time. Could you shed some light on the situation? Is he still in the setup?
Well, yes, because, you know, it was an unfortunate case with him. But now, thanks to God, FIFA is going to change the rule. So okay, that rule supposed to be come in place by the FIFA Congress on September 18th. We will know a little bit more after that Congress.
Okay, so fingers crossed, he should be able to represent Barbados.
Exactly, yes. That paragraph five, as they were considering him as a normal naturalization, that will be out. As you know, Christian Pierce is a biological Barbadian. So, but unfortunately, there is a paragraph saying regarding the citizenship and player eligibility. So by September 18th, we Barbados and nearly around the global are hoping that we have a new eligibility rule. So we will have to wait and see after the 18th of September.
I know you're always in touch with your fellow technical directors around the world, especially in CONCACAF. What's been the reaction to the prospect of training for World Cup qualifiers with the whole onset of the COVID pandemic? It's a bit of a nightmare, but we do have these qualifiers coming up.
Yeah, well, we are talking nearly every day. And being honest with you, it is not easy for each member association because, you know, all our international players, they cannot come to their countries. We don't know which stage in their countries are. Let's say now, if we need to get a Nick Blackman, he will have to come from Tel Aviv to Barbados. And we don't know if they consider transit, you know, as you have to go to the quarantine, because what they say is you have to have your test the last 3 days. And let's say now from Tel Aviv to Miami, if you have to do another test again, because while you were in. So right now it's not easy for everybody. But beside that, really and truly, that could be an advantage for us. As you know, the majority of the time, the last couple of years, we were playing 90% with local-based players. So this World Cup qualifiers may be the World Cup qualifiers of local home-based players. As you see, Panama now call up for 30 players for the next 2 months. So they're training, living together for every day. So despite being difficult, I'm very positive and glad to hear, knowing that I have 90% of my players home. So that will be an advantage for Barbados. Like, you know, when you say now, teams like St. Kitts or Dominican Republic or, you know, Dominica as well, they have average players from 12 to 16 players from outside.
I want to bring in BAFA President Randy Harris at this point. We saw a story coming out of Trinidad midweek, where our friend Mr. Look Lawyer, can't remember his first name, I think he's one of the architects behind the Friends of Football in Trinidad group. And he's basically saying that he hopes the CBU, the CFU, I should say, would lobby for the postponement of the World Cup qualifiers. Randy, has he sent anything formally? And what's been the response from the CFU?
He won't send anything formally to me at this time. I recognize the normalization committee.
Okay.
But apart from that, it seems that Mr. Keith LeCloy would think that the president of the Caribbean Football Union would deal with these issues in public. Mm-hmm. That is not the way that I do business. I am a vice president of CONCACAF, and I have an heir to CONCACAF. And basically, there is a executive committee meeting on Wednesday, and after the meeting, CONCACAF and FIFA will make a joint statement on the qualifiers.
The latest also following that statement, I guess everyone would know, FIFA officially wrote to the parties in Trinidad. I believe the deadline is September 16th, I believe, to have certain things put in place or face sanctions. I suspect this could include possible sanctions that would impact upon the World Cup qualification. Anything else about that you can say? Your CFU?
FIFA has, as you said, has written the TNT FA, and they have issued a warning. And basically, that is where it's at this time. They have until the September 16th to withdraw the case, or there will be definite sanctions against football in Trinidad Tobago.
Any idea as to what these sanctions would be as yet?
I can tell you it can go from suspension of the association, which I think will be most likely. But I was trying to get some information to find out if they would deal with the members who have bought the court injunction separately. But it would seem that the most likely punishment would be suspension of Trinidad and Tobago, because FIFA really cannot afford for members to take any issues to court. This can provide a nightmare for football worldwide. It would not only mean in a situation like this, but obviously if Trinidad and Tobago FA is allowed to get away with something like this, you can imagine if somebody is unhappy with the way our World Cup game goes, they can take the issue to ordinary courts of law. The whole idea of FIFA requesting as part of your membership to observe their rule regarding matters in contention. Basically, you can decide that you won't become a member of FIFA. You have told them that you would abide by the rules and regulations governing the FIFA. And then because something happens that you are unhappy with, you just decide that you're going to break these rules. It is not going to be an easy session, but I believe with some heat that the matter may be withdrawn. It's a more sensible thing to do.
Okay, Randy, don't go away. I have another question coming in for our technical director, Amin Mohammed. This one is pertaining to the team. I believe the squad has been broken down to 24. Someone is querying if there's another cut coming, or will we move forward with this bunch as you head towards the qualifiers?
Well, right now we have 28 players, 24 players and 4 goalkeepers. And the plan is to go forward with these players here. But as you know, you never know. Something might happen in between. But the plan is to go forward with these players. And we are including time to times our under 20 players. As you know, their qualifiers, well, their games will be in first quarter of 2021. and we are preparing them already for that. So we always include 8 players for the under 20 age category into the senior national team.
Into the squad. Okay, back to you, President Harris. The election is upcoming. Finally, I can't wait to get it out of the way so we can resume focusing on the on-the-field action. We're into the home stretch now. I would assume everything is ready for the process at the gymnasium this coming weekend.
Well, as ready as can be. We in the BFA, we are getting ahead with our duty and our plans as normal. The AGM and the elections are not stopping us from managing our association until the time comes and our members decide. So the election is all part of the organization, but we are not going to kill ourselves over the AGM, which is on Sunday at the Cigarfield Sobers Gymnasium. The clubs would decide how they want to go forward.
Okay, we have another one coming in. This one is for TD Amin Mohammed. Says, with no competitive football being played on the island, do you believe training is enough? And what is the possibility of some friendly internationals ahead of the World Cup qualifiers?
Can I reply to that?
Okay, fine.
Listen, this is not a normal situation. Right now, which team can come to Barbados and be quarantined for 14 days, waiting for till after 14 days to play a friendly international? It is already an expensive and troublesome exercise in normal times. You can imagine how it will be at this time. We have to train and prepare ourselves. What we have to do is to try to instill confidence in our players. And that will mean that we have a lot of work to do, because our football is not being played just on the field of play. It is being played in the boardroom. It is being played at breakfast on mornings when our players can't look their opponents in the eye. And basically, it is unlikely that we will have friendly internationals at this time. It is okay. Unlikely. As a matter of fact, all the schedules of FIFA and CONCACAF are suggested dates at this time, but it all depends on how the protocols in this COVID goes. And of course, there are many countries in the Caribbean whose ports of entry are still shut down, so that would be almost an impossibility.
I guess the positive in that scenario though is that everyone is basically operating on a level playing field. No one can really have that sort of advantage. We're all basically waiting to see what will happen. Anything to add, TD Mohammed?
Well, right now, as the president said, and the president answered to that question, but what we are doing right now is to play against the under 20 and to play against the other ones who are not in the main squad. So we have the majority of the time on Fridays and Saturday mornings, some series of friendlies against the B team and against the under 20 national team.
Okay, more messages coming in. This one says, good evening team. What's the latest on local football in resumption? I don't want to speak for the president, but I know what he will say most likely. Until we get the go ahead from the authorities, we really can't proceed because that is a serious matter. Paraphrase nicely, Randy.
Yes, I think you hit it on the head. Yeah. In the immediate future, there will be no football under the auspices of the Barbados Football Association. It is a very expensive exercise to have competition at this time, but we don't know what is going to happen by the end of October, November. So at this time, I can state that in the near future, we wouldn't have a football competition or activity. Football activity at the various communities basically would depend on permission from our COVID-19 team, and unless one is in a controlled environment that they have total control over movement in and out, I think that will be more or less an impossibility at this time.
Okay. President Harris, I think this one is for you as well. Well, I'm assuming. It says, good night, team. Pertaining to the elections, I'm trying to sum it up. Okay, the person is essentially asking, Randy, how would the BFA move forward, being that you're not challenged for the position as presidency, if you have an all-new executive, given how contentious the build-up to the election has been?
Okay, well, I pride myself with some skills. And obviously, I am not being challenged for the presidency. Football has to go on. We have a number of projects that we want to get started in the near future, because obviously this is downtime and it's a good time to start some of our projects. And I think that while the new candidates are trying to promote themselves, I hope that they come with the mindset that we will work together to ensure that there is cohesion in football, and that they will bring something to the table to enhance whatever the Football Association is doing at the moment. I would like to think of myself as a professional, and I have to operate with whomever is elected on Sunday.
Hey, Randy, another message coming in. Yes, Paul.
Okay,
this was just a shout out from a group of Barbadians living in the Cayman Islands, locked on. They want to say good evening to everyone. They are too also saying there's no football over there. And of course, their situation, COVID-19 is a bit worse than ours is. So good luck to everyone in the Cayman Islands. Good evening as well to the Shins and Boots team. And someone here is backing Lionel Messi to go to Manchester City. A bit more on that in the program. Yes, Paul.
Yeah, question for the technical director. I want to move a little bit away from the national team setup, and in terms of a little bit wider, in terms of development. Talk to us a little bit about your ideas, your plan for the general development, of football in Barbados.
Yeah, well, let me start by the coaching education. Right now, we are by the B license level. So we are after four countries, we started with the B license. After us came Jamaica, St. Kitts, and Costa Rica. So meaning for the entire region of all 41 countries of CONCACAF, Barbados is one of the top level coaches who have in the B license. And beside that, we have our own instructors. And that is a huge thing for us, because going forward, we are allowed to do our own courses, meaning we have seven local instructors. Back in the days, you were limited. Let's say per year, you were allowed to do only certain amount of courses, correctly by two coaching courses per year. So now we are able to do and put our own courses. So going by the youth football, we have from under 9 to under 17. There, as I said before, we are in Division 1 in the elite football. As you know, B license is also elite football. We are moving towards that. We are the only country in this region who have their own elite league. So we started with the Future Trident Development Program with 180 players. The main aim that is, you know, to make sure the future of the national teams, to make sure the future of the professionalization of our league. So now we are in the second stage, meaning we will have under 13 and 15. Beside that, we are trying to create more homegrown players who are going overseas to play football, so professional footballers. Because as you know, the market is huge. As you know, you must get the wow effect of other countries. So for example, now, this I consider this as a product. You need to know what product is wanted in the market. And we want to provide, with the help of the clubs, so more players can go out and playing professional football. So that's why we have our Future Trident Development Program. So beside that, we have the women's and girls football. Unfortunately, there we have been a little bit struggling in the past with the girls league. So now I put a plan in place for 2 years, working with the government and working with Emerson Boys Foundation. The main idea is now we have 150 girls from the primary school. So from there, that's our base that we are trying to implement, like the Future Trident Development Program, the Girls League. So we are going to start there under 10 and under 12, yeah, with continuity. So that's the other stuff that we have. And make sure and guide the players that we have outside of Barbados. So that is long short of it, everything what we have been doing so far.
Another one for you.
Women's League. Go ahead, Curtis.
Another one for TD Mohammed. Someone querying if Curtis Jones and Rianne Brewster are on the BFA radar. I believe they're both based in England, would have played some football for Liverpool. One would have represented England at the under 21 level. Correct me if I'm wrong, TD Mohammed, but that would preclude him from representing Barbados?
Well, right now we are behind every player. Okay. So we have a huge scouting list. So let's say I have enough contacts in Europe or around the global that we are looking players with Belgian heritage. So we know who we have out there. And yes, we do consider them. Yes, I'm aware of Brian. He's the only player, only Belgian player who ever scored 3 goals against Brazil. So a good player like him is always welcome. So what other people don't know is those ones that we have currently. So let's say now, the last 2 weeks, they were European qualifications. So I'm asking myself, how many people does know, like players like Nick Blackman, the last 5 games, he scored 4 goals. Unfortunately, he missed a penalty last night. So, or like a youngster, Thierry Gale, playing, you know, in the Hungarian League or close to play a Euro League as the first Belgian-born player to play in a European competition.
So of course not. Hold on. No. We got a fella here called Gregory Lalo Goodridge. Well, never ever forget him.
Well, my apologies, and I know he will message me now, but I will deal with him later.
I made it for my phone to start buzzing. Gregory Lalo.
So
a long-standing Liverpool fan.
That we have Curtis Hudson. What I'm trying to say is, you know, you have a Tuesday, a Wednesday, a Thursday, Belgian players out there playing international football. So what I would like to have is more homegrown fan base, you know, for our players. So that is, yeah.
I want to say good evening as well to Ronaldo Pee Wee Jilts. I'm seeing him in the background. I'm not sure if you have any questions from you guys. Once again, this is the Penalty Spot in association with the BFA as we take a look at the world of local, regional, and international football. Still to come, we hear from Fazir Mohammed Paul. I guess we're going to have to head in that direction very, very soon to hear the very latest from Trinidad football.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe we can ensure that as soon as Fazio is over, we're going to come back to all of our special guests. I see Anmar of The Nation is already there. Olivia is also there. Dexter Marshall is also there. He's also expecting. Kenneth is expecting to drop in as soon as we touch on Liverpool. I'm sure he will fly to defend Liverpool. But we're going to nip over to Port of Spain. And Curtis mentioned it a bit earlier, the saga that is happening in football. There's really a sad one, Curtis. And Fazio Mohamed has been updating us on the very latest on what has been happening there. So let's join him with that discussion.
Thanks for joining us on Penalty Spot. And this situation in Trinidad with the football FIFA and the Trinidad Football Association. So much has happened over the past few weeks. I don't even know where to start. I think the last thing I've been hearing is that the delegates representing the clubs, they're prepared to send a petition, I think it's tomorrow morning, demanding that the William Wallace and the United TTFA drop the case against FIFA. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, well, that's where we are at the moment, Paul. And indeed, this would usually be a celebratory time because it's Independence Day, August the 31st, but certainly a time of great anxiety amid the football fraternity and indeed amid the national fraternity, because it would be seen as a huge humiliation for Trinidad and Tobago to be suspended or otherwise sanctioned by FIFA if the deposed TTFA administration headed by William Wallace, if they continue with this legal action, which is now in the courts of Trinidad and Tobago. And at this point, there's no indication that Mr. Wallace and the other members who are party to this legal action are prepared to back down.
The sports minister recently held a meeting of the stakeholders expressing government's concern over this situation.
And what was all the more disappointing about that particular meeting held on Thursday, from what we understand, Mr. Wallace, together with Keith Lucloy, who's of course one of the key supporters of this deposed TTFA executive, and other members who were involved in the legal action, were all invited to be part of this virtual meeting. But either they declined, or as in the case of Mr. Wallace, he's on record at an interview saying that he didn't get any invitation. And it really comes down to who you believe, because according to the sports minister, Shamfa Kudjo, she was saying that every attempt possible was made to reach Mr. Wallace, either via email or WhatsApp or whatever format you can think of. And at the end of it, they didn't turn up for the meeting. They weren't present. And that has left a very sour taste in the mouths of individuals, as well as to whether or not they are even prepared to entertain listening to what the government will have to say, because there are many sides to this issue, Paul. It's not just a simple case of backing down from the legal action for the sake of keeping Trinidad and Tobago football afloat, because there's what is perceived as the entire injustice of the manner in which the Wallace administration was removed by FIFA in the first place. So it's a very complicated issue. It gets messier by the day. We even have the situation where football coaches who haven't been paid since January of this year were locked out from the offices of the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association, which are located in the Ato Boldin Stadium in central Trinidad. That occurred on Wednesday. And again, depending on who you talk to, depending on who you believe, there are many different people at fault in this latest matter.
You get the feeling, Faz, that from the reaction recently from the delegates representing the clubs, that they seem to be getting a little anxious that a ban could very well be a lot closer following that letter sent by FIFA outlining its position, re-Article 59.
That is correct. But also, those who are trying their best to be impartial in this matter are saying, why are you expressing your concerns now? Why didn't you express your concern from the very start of the process? Is it that you believe that this was just a bluff by Mr. Wallace and his executive team and their legal team, because they had taken it to the Court of Arbitration for sport? They turned back from that because they felt the manner in which they were being dealt with by CAS was certainly not what you would expect from an impartial organization. That's why they went to the courts of Trinidad and Tobago. There was ample time over the last 3 or 4 months for these different constituent elements of the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association to make their voices known. They may still hold sway. We have to wait and see. I'm not too clear exactly what the statutes of the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association state in detail, because these legal matters are often open to interpretation. But from what I understand, once there's a greater than 50% majority of those who are petitioning for a reconsideration of the situation. It could actually go to a general council meeting of the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association, and Mr. Wallace and company can actually be forced to withdraw that legal action, because, of course, as we've established previously in our discussions, the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association has been established by an act of parliament in Trinidad and Tobago. So it's very much part of the laws of this country. So again, we are waiting to see. But once more, the fact that these organizations are expressing their concerns now, many are saying, why did you wait until the last minute?
Wallace and the TTFA faction, they seem to be a couple weeks ago coming to a position where they were, I think at one stage, they were asking for dialogue with FIFA. Has the recent court decision kind of had them digging their heels, so to speak?
I think it has. And but once more, as Mr. Lucloy mentioned, again, it really depends on which side you're on. He's saying that they are being painted as the bad guys in this fight by almost everyone. Let's say 95% of the population and the media in Trinidad and Tobago. And Mr. Lucloy has pointed out that they were the first to attempt to go to mediation. They went to CAS, didn't feel they were being treated fairly. They sought mediation with the TTFA. At one point, it looked promising. And then, mediation with FIFA, excuse me. And at one point, it looked promising. But then FIFA suddenly dropped the matter, claiming that the deposed TTFA executive should not have gone public with the issue. And this is another element of it, that yes, many people are holding the view, this is what you signed on to by being a member of FIFA, because that's what you are as a nation, as a footballing nation, and you would have certainly ratified other countries being suspended over many years, and therefore you would have agreed to all of these statutes. So it's being disingenuous to say that it doesn't apply to you now in this situation. But having said that, the entire matter, the entire issue about the administration of world football, where basically FIFA can essentially run things bigger to a level where they are above different governments around the world, again comes to the fore. At the end of it all, I suspect, because of FIFA's might, because of the fact that they control the most powerful game in the world, because this could be to the detriment of thousands and tens of thousands of young people in Trinidad and Tobago who love to play the game, who are looking for scholarships, who are looking for club contracts in different parts of the world. The weight of pressure could very well result in the William Wallace team eventually withdrawing the matter. But at this point, as you said, it appears that they're digging their heels in because they believe they have the moral high ground, even if everyone else would appear to be against them.
Looking at how the Wallace and his team have reacted to developments so far, in your view, do you think that FIFA ban may have very well come?
We'll have to wait and see, because they have until September the 16th to withdraw the legal matter. That is the latest communication that was given by FIFA to the TTFA Normalization Committee to be relayed to the deposed TTFA executive. There's quite a bit of time. There are 2 weeks between now and then, and a little over 2 weeks. And a lot can happen in that space of time. You don't get the sense at this point that William Wallace and company are prepared to back down, that they are prepared to endure all the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune that might be hurled in their direction. But again, it's about the pressure of the situation, about the consequences, about the constant interviews with players all over the world who are saying their careers could now be in jeopardy and their livelihoods and their families' livelihoods could be at stake. So it's very much a snowballing effect or a tsunami effect because we're in the tropics. But at this point, it looks as if the Wallace team are holding firm. But anything can happen within the next 16 days.
Two final questions, Faz. What is the latest situation with the rest of the coaches who have not yet been paid by the Normalization Committee? And how has the situation impacted the upcoming CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers being played by Trinidad?
Well, there has been some training taking place under new coach Terry Fenwick, and even that is a controversial issue. I might have alluded to that, but I'm sure your football audience in Barbados will be aware that Wallace had agreed to an increase in Fenwick's contract outside of what had been previously agreed by the board, and that in itself has been a controversial point. So almost every single thing you touch in Trinidad and Tobago football is a bone of contention. But as far as the readiness of the team, well, they are in training to a certain extent. extent. Of course, Fenwick would like to get some of the foreign-based players. That is really being frustrated by a lack of funding, a lack of resources, because the FIFA is not releasing any money to the Trinidad and Tobago Footballer Association Normalization Committee. So at this point, it appears that they are getting ready for the qualifiers in October. Whether or not they will actually take part in them, we'll probably know within the next couple of weeks. And as to the coaches' situation, they still haven't been paid. They were finally able to present their documents to the TTA FA office. But the bigger issue with that is that the head of the TTFA Normalization Committee, a businessman by the name of Robert Haddad, he had said that from the very outset in March that he was prepared to communicate with everyone associated with football to get things sorted out. Well, it turned out he's communicated with almost no one. And that is why the coaches were at the Atobolan Stadium on Wednesday looking to present their contracts, because they said there's been no dialogue. They've described the situation as completely ridiculous. And at this stage, everywhere you turn, as I said, Paul, when it comes to football in Trinidad and Tobago, there is a major controversy. There are far too many fires to put out, even in this rainy season.
Fazir Mohamed, thanks a lot for joining us on Penalty Spot.
No problem at all.
Hour of 7 in Barbados and the Eastern Caribbean. 10 minutes of discussion. Thanks a lot from Fazir Mohamed. I guess the general consensus, Trinidad football is in a mess. No other way to describe it. William Wallace and company have some thinking to do, but I would hope that common sense would prevail, and for the good of football, we would see some movement forward, hopefully, and no ban. That is never good, Paul. You never want to see an entire association being banned. I think it is pretty clear at this point that even the supporters of William Wallace in the early days are now hoping that he backtracks a bit, and we can see the resumption of football and Trinidad not being removed from, possibly, I should say, because we don't know what's going to happen, possibly being removed from the World Cup qualifiers, because they're still one of our powerhouses, one of the two Caribbean countries to make it all the way. And that would be a huge blow, not only for the country, but also the players.
Well, definitely, Curtis. And as you said, let's hope that some common sense prevails, and we really don't want any brinkmanship. And on the 16th of the month, we are sitting back and just waiting for FIFA to step in and, you know, and do what they would normally do in those situations. Let's hope that it is resolved long before the Minister of Sport has been trying to get the William Wallace body to back off. The clubs have now formed, come together. They're hoping that they can do something about it. But you guys seem to be digging in. So let's hope that between now and the 16th, that something has been worked out and football gets back to a bit of normalcy in Trinidad and Tobago.
No, we need to look at what is happening internationally as well. Before I go any further, though, I must say good evening to Keith Brel Griffith, sir. Got to put a sir on it because Arsenal have won another trophy, 2 in recent weeks. Last if we say that. So good evening to all of the Arsenal fans. Keith Brel Griffith, Sean as well. Good evening to you, Sean, and all of the Arsenal fans. Kenneth has a wry smile he's wearing. But good evening to all the Arsenal fans. Looking pretty good under their new coach, and I think Arsenal, all things considered, I don't think they're top 4 as yet for the new season, but will provide a stiffer challenge, I do believe, in the upcoming season. But of course, the big international story, as we would expect, Lionel Messi and his proposed departure from the club of his youth, Barcelona. I guess, guys, the main question: do we think Messi's bluffing? Does he really want to go? Is it all a bluff to get rid of the president, who indicated previously that if Messi stays for the good of the club, he would go? Or is Messi, as he's done before, on the hunt for another pay increase? I believe we can start with you, Kenneth. Kenneth Onyekwe, our longstanding guest. Good evening to you, Kenneth. Commiserations on losing the Community Shield. But before we head there, Messi, bluffing, staying, likely to head to Manchester City. Your thoughts.
Good evening, everyone. Messi's not bluffing, unfortunately. And it's the Trinidad Tobago FA, the situation at the FC Barcelona is a mess. He's not bluffing. The FC Barcelona does not want to lose him. And La Liga has come out to back FC Barcelona. So, and Messi didn't show up for pre-season testing, COVID-19 testing and training. So already he's showing his card. So, yeah, he's not bluffing.
How do you see it? La Liga has put out a statement saying that they basically side with Barcelona, that if he leaves right now, the fee must be paid, the 600 million euros, which no one will pay, let's be realistic, to get a 33-year-old, 34-year-old Lionel Messi. Messi and his team are adamant that the clause is still active, then he can still go. Of all the clubs for him to be going to, he's going to Manchester City, who've recently had their own battle with the financial fair play rules and the Court of Arbitration for Sport. And I have another question coming in for the entire panel. And this one is saying, gentlemen, do you believe at this point any club should be outlaying that significance than for Lionel Messi?
Well, when you consider the kind of income you can make with Lionel Messi in your team, you can't justify getting Lionel Messi, but not for 700 million euros. The fact remains that if push comes to shove, La Liga has backed FC Barcelona. And if Lionel Messi, unfortunately for Lionel Messi, I think he's a bit power drunk. I think he's seriously power drunk. Yes, you want to go. Yes, you are the bull in the china shop. But the fact remains that legally, you didn't do your homework and get yourself legally unentangled from FC Barcelona. When you had the opportunity before the end of the before the contract elapsed, or that clause elapsed, he should have indicated before May 31st that I want to leave. You know, by the same mean that he used legally after the clause had elapsed. So, if he wants to really push it, he can go the legal route and go all the way to the Court of Arbitration for Sports. But Barcelona do have the advantage because they have a legally binding contract. They can compromise and perhaps decide, well, listen, we've done some stupid things in the transfer market. We spent over 350 million euros buying players that sat on the bench when we played Bayern Munich. And one of them came on the pitch and scored two goals against us and assisted with one other goal. We can perhaps compromise and, you know, get someone to give us a world record fee, more than what we pay for Neymar. So we can recoup some of the expenses that we've laid out for those players, and you can go. So if any club is willing to perhaps bring 250 million euros, perhaps FC Barcelona will let Messi leave. But I don't think they'll let him leave for free.
Okay, we've also been joined by The Nation Newspapers and Mark Goodrich-Boyce. Before we get some more on his thoughts on Messi, some more of the international news today, Zlatan Ibrahimovic has signed a new extension to his one-year deal at AC Milan. Henrik Mkhitaryan has joined Roma from Arsenal. David Silva, unfortunately, has tested positive for coronavirus. We wish him all the best in the future. That's the ex-Manchester City star. And young Van der Beek is heading to Man United from Ajax. I think that's a quality buy for Man United, who've been pretty quiet, like Liverpool, in the transfer market so far. But this is an extended transfer market. I believe we go to October. I figure most of the clubs would want their team to be settled before the season kicks off in about 2 weeks' time. But yes, Anmar, good evening to you. Thanks for being a part of the program. Messi, how do you see that one shaping out in the future? Going to Manchester City, save the world, get Manchester City the Champions League, which they so desperately want? Or does he stay at Barcelona? Is he forced to stay? I read a story today saying that he could be fined up to £1.1 million for not showing up for COVID-19 testing or the first practice session. Of course, Messi, that is not major, given the sums of money he makes, but still, it's a unfortunate situation.
Hi, good night, Curtis, and good night to the entire panel. Yes, it is indeed a very interesting story surrounding Lionel Messi. We're not talking about an ordinary player. We're talking about one of the best, if not the best footballer in the entire world. I think, you know, Messi, I think he's going to stay at Barcelona, believe it or not. Manchester City would be the only team that I see right now in terms of finances that will be able to afford a player of, you know, his magnitude. We're talking about 600, I think 600 million pounds is the buyout clause within the deal. So I think Manchester City or Manchester United, if we're looking at finances, are the only two teams that will be able to afford him. It's a bit unfortunate, I think, the entire situation. Messi has been outstanding for Barcelona. He's been there at the club since his youth level. And I think for the situation to come like this and to end like this, I think is very sad, you know, Messi being one of the greatest the game has ever seen.
In terms of some more international developments today, Kai Havertz, his coach has said he's unlikely to play for the team again. He's off to duty with Germany, but Bayer Leverkusen have apparently now confirmed indirectly that he's on his way to Chelsea following that Nations League game, I believe it is, and the £90 million move to Chelsea, which was a bit stretched out over the summer. It was the biggest transfer story not to happen, but it appears that it's going to happen now. We've also been joined by Nick Maitland. Not sure if Nick has any questions, but Amin Mohamed or TD is still with us. Transfers, I mean, always a part of football, can destabilize players. Take us into the mind of a coach. You're about to start your new season and you have a situation like Messi. He's on your books, clearly does not want to play, but he's your best player. What do? Do you cash in or do you say, okay, you're my player, I believe you're my player, and even if we have to go to court, I'm going to keep you for this extra year before I let you go next August? Yeah, how would you say it?
Well, I mean, knowing according to the age of the players, Messi is not the youngest anymore. So, and out there are enough players. So what I would do is to let him go, to sell him and get two younger players instead of him. So, I mean, I would say, for example, if I can get those 700 millions, I would get a player type like, Mbappe. You know, he's available, and I'm quite sure you could get him and Neymar together for 700 millions, and I would let him go. So right now, what Barcelona need is a new start. The team is quite overaged, and we have been seeing in the last couple of games as they played in the Champions League. So right now, for me personally, as a coach, as a technical director, I would let him go.
Okay, you sell him, take the money, and go.
I would sell him, take the money according to the age, and get two qualitative young players.
Kenneth, do you keep him? Do you ship him on, given he's age 33? I think if I was a coach, given what he's going to cost me, yes, he's Lionel Messi, he's going to sell shirts. He's probably going to get me 35 goals a season. But I wanted to see him in England 3 seasons ago, age 29, 30, at peak Messi. He's still brilliant, don't get me wrong. But is he worth that money now for Manchester City, for Man United, for, I'm seeing, someone else was linked to him, PSG. Is he worth that money at this stage?
I'm not even thinking of it in money terms. I'm thinking of it in terms of legacy. You know, when you think of one club players, Messi was meant to be the best of the best. You know, when we think of players like Gerrard, Totti, Paul Scholes, Messi was meant to be right up there for Barcelona. This is a child, this is a boy that started playing for Barcelona right from his teenage years, you know, and with what he has achieved in La Liga. I mean, I know people call him the best player in the world. I call him a La Liga and European football legend. I don't know about world football, you know. But what he has achieved in La Liga, you know, if he was moving like Cristiano Ronaldo, going around and proving himself in top leagues, I'll say, yeah, move as quickly as possible. But I don't think he's worth the effort. He's only going to disrupt quite a lot of teams. Like the gentleman said earlier, Man City is his only option. If he's coming to United Kingdom, he's welcome to the Premier League because I'm sure there are a lot of people that will be very happy to welcome him with some very tough challenges. But he will only go to other clubs and disrupt them and disrupt the way they play, disrupt their finances just for, you know, a brief stay. I don't think Messi has more than another 3 seasons in the top flight. So I don't think it's worth leaving Barcelona. But if he does, I'm sure he will relish the new challenge.
And opinion on the question coming in from Roland Butcher. Good evening to you, Roland. He says, what's the point of keeping an unhappy player who doesn't want to play for you anymore? Find a way to do the deal and let him go. So I think most people at this stage seem in favor of cashing in on Lionel Messi. A question coming in for you, Kenneth. And I guess this one would apply to Anmar and Nick as well, given their affiliation with Man United, the club of their support. Why have those two clubs been so quiet thus far in the transfer market? I think Liverpool don't need that many players. You need to be strategic, and if you buy players, Chelsea went the opposite route. They played with all the youth academy players last season. They're splashing the cash. Liverpool won the Champions League, won the Premier League in two consecutive seasons. I don't think they're short in that many areas. Man United, though, could, you can justify asking for players there. Your thoughts?
Well, I must remind people that Liverpool didn't sign any player last summer and they won the league, won the Super Cup. Well, they signed, they didn't pay any money for any players because, yeah. I mean, we signed Adrian for free.
Yeah.
But they won three trophies. So I think people should really not worry too much. Liverpool will sign players. But Liverpool, again, I think I sent a table to the group recently. If you look at the table for when it comes to net spend, Liverpool's at the very bottom of the net spend table. You know, we're not Man United. Man United spends a lot of money to be glorious in the Europa Cup. So I think Liverpool would take their time. I know Bayern Munich, they're trying to pressure Liverpool to pay a lot of money for Thiago. That's not going to happen. You know, so Man United has already bought Ronny van der Beek today for about 40 million euros. They're still very much interested in getting Jadon Sancho. And I would like Man United to spend that cash, because when Man United spends the cash, teams have money to then, you know, churn, you know, drive the system, just like Chelsea has done. You know, the Chelsea money is already being used to purchase other players. So I'm sure Man United will still do some business. Again, recall last season, Man United did their business pretty late in the season. And I expect them to still, you know, do that again this season.
I think as it stands, Man United have made the transfer of the year thus far. Made it in the January transfer window. That cannot be disputed. Fernandes was a good buy. Question coming in. Which team do you guys think could most improve and threaten the status quo in the new season? I guess this is in England. For me, Kenneth is not going to like this one, but Arsenal. I think Arsenal can improve the most of the top six or seven. United look good. United were perhaps the informed team. Man United at the back end of the existing season. I think they lost one game in like 18 at the back end of the season. But I think of the teams arming themselves most for an assault of the top four at this stage, for me, it has to be Arsenal.
Well, I'm sure Arsenal will finish sixth or below. Anyone can take that to the bank. I know Ronald will be very interested in that. I'm sure they'll finish sixth or below with the kind of investment that Chelsea has made. It's either Frank Lampard swims very fast or sinks quickly. You know, Man United, they're going to make some investments. And I see Spurs being the top challengers for the top four, not Arsenal.
Okay. You think Spurs under Jose can do Jose as per usual?
Yes.
That's the wise words of Kenny Poneke, bringing us into the home stretch on today's program. It's been our pleasure bringing it to you in association with the BFA. I want to thank everyone who's been a part of the program, BFA President Randy Harris, or Technical Director Ahmed Mohammed. He says, for the first time in 4 years, for me, that's number two or three. But thank you for coming, sir. We need to have you once again, as per usual, Kenneth Onyekwe, and of also Nick Maitland and Ronaldo Jilts in the background. I think Dexter Marshall was there as well. And of course, Nation Newspapers and Mark Goodrich Boyce. I want to say good luck to everyone who is facing the polls at the upcoming BFA elections. And of course, on Monday, right after that election, we take a look back at the new executive of the BFA. Until then, this has been the Penalty Spot. In association with the BFA, you can join us next week, same time, same station, as we take a look at the world of the local, regional, and international football.